Hello, everyone. Welcome to another episode of What the How? And this week we're talking about something very serious, actually. We're talking about the problems associated with social media, everything from hate to eating disorders. Meet my guest.
My name is Ed Peisner. I'm the founder of the Organization for Social Media Safety.
I'm Jordan Peisner.
And your role in this is?
I'm my dad's son. I'm Ed's son.
You are a victim. Because you were sucker punched. That was videotaped at school. People saw it, and it had a big effect on you, right?
Yeah.
And so that's where the state developed Jordan's Law, which basically says what?
It says that if you are, you know, involved in a social media crime where someone gets in a fight and something bad happens and you film it and you know about it, you can get, you know, prosecuted, I guess, and get punished for it, because right now you won't.
All right. So Jordan Peisner is dad, Ed. You started this after your incident. Mark Berkman, tell us about you.
I am the executive director of the Organization for Social Media Safety.
And you cover a lot of areas, and we're going to get into that in a minute. Hal?
my name is Hal Lee. I'm a professor at USC in computer science. I'm also the director of the USC Institute for Creative Technologies and CEO of a company called Pinscreen.
Okay. All right. Gia?
Hi, I'm Gia Marson. I'm a psychologist, and I am a generalist, but I have a specialty in treating people with eating disorders, and I consult for the UCLA Eating Disorders Program.
Nikki?
Hi, I'm Nikki DeBose. I'm a former model turned author and advocate, and I founded the mental health community Tragedy to Triumph.
Okay. All right. So what we're going to talk about is social media problems, but we're going to talk about it in a couple of different ways. So let's start with Ed.
Sure, Hal. Thank you. Jordan was the victim of a social media motivated attack where someone came up behind him without his knowledge and punched him in the head, where he was dropped to the ground and suffered a traumatic brain injury. He was airlifted to the hospital, spent 6 days in ICU, and the entire attack was videotaped using someone's smartphone who had prior knowledge of the attack, and then they shared that attack and the video on social media, where it went viral very quickly.
Now, Jordan, obviously, this was a very traumatic experience, but you went the extra mile. You went the extra mile, and you and your dad went to Sacramento. You tried to get a law. What was that experience like for you?
I didn't actually go with him, but I know about the whole, you know, like, road to it, and it was hard. Like, it was hard to make a law that actually had some meaning and could actually do something in this, you know, in what we're trying to do.
Did you have to testify at any kind of committee hearings or anything like
No.
that?
No.
So you weren't put in that position. Dad did all of that.
Yeah.
What was that like?
Amazing, actually. You know, I've never done anything. As I told you earlier, I was in the banking world before this tragedy, and driving up to Sacramento, I remember driving the whole way up there thinking, I can't believe I'm going to go to Sacramento and testify. But it changed my life. It really did, sitting there and telling them what happened to my child. And I still, 2 years later, can't get around talking about it without the lump in my throat.
You were warmly received by legislators.
Yeah. Yes.
Because there were people who believed that the message you had was one that resonated.
Correct.
And needed to be dealt with.
Correct.
So it didn't take long, it seems to me, for that law to come into play.
Correct. And Mark, we're probably talking that. It was less than a year from when we testified to when that the law passed.
Mark, that's pretty amazing. That's really pretty amazing when you think about it.
It is amazing. To put it into perspective, it took me, took my office about 4 years in Congress to pass a bill to name a courthouse. So less than a year to pass a law is...
Yeah, would you say that again? I mean, you know, that's crazy. It took what?
It took the old office I worked at on Capitol Hill in Congress. It took about 4 years to pass a bill to name a courthouse.
All right, so all together now, what the hell, right?
what the hell?
Right? You gotta wonder about that. I mean, that's kind of crazy. But Hallie, you are a professor at USC. You deal with these issues. What can you share at this point about the pervasiveness of this?
Yeah, I think right now it's kind of interesting because all these discussions are just happening, right? And there isn't much of these. I think we're just starting to talk with we're just starting to talk. We're just starting to talk with lawmakers, and then starting to raise the awareness. I mean, the U.S. Congress hearing on deepfakes, it was just the first one that just happened like a month ago.
Well, what people who are listening to this might not understand is that we don't edit this. So Mark's phone was ringing.
And Hal Lee, sorry.
Hal Lee was kind of waiting for him to pick up the phone. But we're not going to edit that.
All right, all right.
So everybody, if you want to know what Mark was talking about with his friend on the phone, you're going to have to write to him and ask him. Doctor, tell me about eating disorders and social media.
Social media is a perfect problem for the onset of eating disorders and the maintenance of them, because people with eating disorders try to strive for perfection. And so much of social media revolves around the idea that perfection is attainable, which it is literally not. And so it keeps people on a hamster wheel of trying to reach perfection, and when they can't because it's impossible, they shame themselves. And so it can have the effect of either exacerbating an eating disorder, triggering an onset if somebody's genetically vulnerable.
All right, you say they shame themselves. How do they shame themselves?
They compare themselves to their friends or to celebrities, and they think, well, if that person can do it, I should be able to do it.
So there are websites, I shouldn't say websites, there are sites, like even on Pinterest, for instance, yeah, that have what they call thinspiration. So it's inspiration with a thin at the beginning of it. And what are those? What's the purpose of that kind of thing?
They're supposed to provide a community for people with eating disorders to give each other tips. Obviously, it is very devastating and terrifying to me, because these illnesses have the highest rate of mortality of any mental illnesses. So when you're colluding with an eating disorder by posting pictures and offering tips and acting as if it's okay to be in this community, it won't kill you, you're really perpetuating something so dangerous.
And Nikki knows that, because Nikki has been through a lot. So yes. Why don't you kind of tell us your story and let people understand what you've experienced?
Yes, so I developed an eating disorder and depression, anxiety, a lot of mental health issues when I was a kid. And I grew up in the South, where you don't really talk about that kind of stuff, and I had an abusive family, so that's just like a whole lot of stuff right there, right, to develop serious mental illness. But I became a model later in my life, when I was a teenager, until my mid-20s, and I had bulimia, anorexia, suicidal ideation, just the whole classic list, right? When you go to psychiatrists and they're like, check everything that applies to you. I'm like, oh my God, everything applies to
that
me.
That was the problem I had, yeah, when I took Psych 101 in college. I felt like I was everything in every chapter.
Okay, yeah. my eating disorder was the main thing I think that almost killed me, because it's physical as well as mental. It's a mental-based illness, but it manifests in the physical, right? So when you're throwing up every day or you're starving yourself, your life expectancy is not going to be that long.
How'd you dig yourself out of that?
It's a sad story, but good story. My mom had her own mental health issues. She was an alcoholic, and she passed away when I was kind of at the height of my modeling career. And so I left Europe. I stopped working. I left my dream behind, and I decided to get better, because I realized that I was a lot like my mom. You know, it's genetic. Mental illness a lot of times is genetic. I was like, if I don't get better, I'm going to end up dead like her. And that was a turning point in my life to seek help. And it took a really long time. It took years.
You talk about being near death several times.
Yeah. And at the time, I was like, you know, I'm a true addict, right? Because I don't realize that I'm having a problem or I'm that sick. But everyone else looking at me can tell, hey, you're in bad shape, you know?
So you heeded that advice and the information people were giving you. A lot of people don't.
Well, I didn't, and that's why I was sick for so many years. I didn't have that family support, and I would never blame a family, because it's not their fault. But it's really important when you know that someone's having an issue to get them into treatment, and I didn't have that. And so by the time I was like in my early 20s, I was already so sick mentally that anything anyone told me just went, you know, I went to the doctor. I went to the hospital one time because I was having a serious medical problem from my eating disorder. And he's like, how long have you had this? Why haven't you been, you know, to a hospital? And I was so blind to my illness that I got scared and I ran out of the hospital.
Oh, really?
I ran out of the hospital. I was so scared to get better because when you're that sick, your illness wants every part of you, right? And so I thought, if I don't have this problem, who am I? Am I, like, you kind of think like OCD, like, is the world going to end for me? Like, what's going to happen? I don't know life out of this, right? So as much as I was sick, I wanted to still stay in my illness.
So you couldn't afford to get help?
No, because it's about $30,000 a month.
And insurance doesn't cover a lot of that.
Yeah, so even with the best insurance, where does that leave you? And my parents were not, you know, my dad's a regular guy. He works hard, but he's not rich. And so, and my mom was dead. So where does, you know, it was really, I felt like I had to make it or else I wasn't. It was all on me. But it wasn't on me because thankfully I had therapist. I actually went online my first time when I realized I didn't have money. I went online and I'm like, I got to find a support group. Like, I got to do something.
Yeah, it sounds to me like that takes a lot. That takes a lot to pull yourself up and say, I'm going to go look for help and do it on my own.
Yeah, it does take a lot. But I'll tell you, when you see your mom die from that, and she died in a horrible way. She got in a car accident, you know, and I wasn't even there. I was living in Europe working. And I'm like, what is my life right now? I need to stop. Because, you know, I think as much as I wanted to die, I have had suicidal ideation my whole life. There was something inside me, which I believe was ingrained in me from the beginning with being spiritual, a Christian, that I thought, I know there's hope. Like, the very bottom of my soul, I knew that there was some hope. And so I started to go to online support groups. I got back into a Christian-based OA, which for me worked, and for everyone, it's something very different. But I did whatever I could just to make it from one moment to the next moment. Because trust me, when you're that sick, it literally is a fight for your life, one moment to the next moment. It's really bad.
Some people may not know exactly what a suicidal ideation is, but a suicidal ideation is having the idea that you might want to commit suicide. It's not being suicidal necessarily, but it's the idea that you may be entertaining ideas of how you might kill yourself.
Yeah.
What were you thinking?
And I think that started when I was 8, and I, you know, I had some sexual trauma, which I've talked quite a lot about, and that was just, when you have that as a kid, you're like, what's wrong with me? You think that over and over in your mind, what's wrong with me? And so it kind of started to lead to darker thoughts, like, well, if I'm just, you know, the suicidal thoughts would come, and I'm thinking, if I'm not here, I can be free from this mental torture and pain. But, you know, God, I met a lot of people in treatment centers that deal with the suicidal ideation. It kind of goes hand in hand sometimes.
But the idea of ideations, suicidal ideations, is close
to... It was almost like a fantasy. Like I would fantasize, and this still happens sometimes. It's a part of having a mental health condition. It still happens to where I'm like, oh, and I think about how I could do that, and I have to, again, pull myself back to that place of I believe in God, I'm spiritual, I have hope, there is a future for me. But it is very hard to get out of that.
Mark, one of the things I keep hearing is the fact that social media, which is for many people a really helpful tool, is really a very dangerous rabbit hole.
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, the number of dangers on there, I don't think we have enough time to list here in the podcast.
Well, go ahead. List a few.
I mean, we're talking about social media-motivated violence, cyberbullying, sexual harassment, eating disorders, which we just touched on, propaganda and misinformation, fraud, privacy invasion.
Trafficking.
Human trafficking, to name a few.
And all of this stems from... What, the anonymity of social media?
A number of reasons, depending on which danger you're talking about, which is why our organization organizes itself by the danger, because you have to look at each danger and how social media is contributing to it.
So what are you doing with that?
So we are set up as a classic consumer protection model. We protect against all social media related dangers, and we do that through education. So we are in schools throughout the country talking to students and parents on how to stay safe on social media and teaching them about a lot of these dangers that they're not even aware of and then how to protect for them. We do that through advocacy. So we have legislation pending in Sacramento right now. We've worked at the city level. We're working at the school board level. And then tech development, where we're working to develop software and applications that provide real-time defense for people on social media.
You know, I've found some apps that are in the app stores that calm you down, that address these sort of mental issues. I don't know if that's something, Nikki, that you found.
Yeah, I love meditation at nighttime. It really helps me because I also have anxiety, so it helps me to just find that balance, you know.
So it could be something as simple as an app that gives you ocean waves or something to meditate on, right?
Yeah, I love, again, spirituality became a big part of my life, and that can mean anything for anyone, right? Like, I'm not trying to say if you don't believe in God that, you know, it's whatever works for you. And sometimes spirituality comes in the form of meditation. I got to take my medicine, there's so many things you got to do to combat, but it's so worth it. You want to feel better. You don't want to go around the rest of your life driving yourself crazy, you know?
What do you say when you hear that, Professor Lee?
Yeah, it totally makes sense, right? Because so when I hear, simple things that one can do, you know, downloading some meditation apps, it's not just like, there are high-performance athletes, there are Marines that are using even these type of apps also for, you know, to treat PTSD, specifically when they go through, extreme stress. Research is also advancing where people are working on, we were talking about this before, virtual reality type of approaches, basically to replace all your senses, right? Because, there's this really interesting experiment where someone puts a hand somewhere, and then there's a fake hand next to it, and they're basically hitting the fake hand. And then by washing it, the other person actually gets the sensation, a visual sensation, right? Because all our senses are actually, connected to each other. There's the audio one, there's the visual one, there's smell, there's tactile sensors. And you can literally remove one of them, and you can use these type of sensors to actually treat certain problems.
Well, I guess, what I'd like to hear from each of you is, and let's go back to Ed, what is it that if you could tell people one thing right now, what would you want to tell them and why,
Hal, again, this all started from a tragedy, and I'm trying to turn a mess into a message, and that's what I've been saying for the last 2 years. Be safe on social media. There's 3.2 billion users of social media on our planet right now. There's access to hate in our kids. They hand kids phones in kindergarten right now, and they have access to everything you talked about and everything you talked about. They had access to all this hate, all this anger, all this violence. So if there's anything I could say to them is just keep, let's keep our kids safe on social media.
Jordan, you want to add to that?
I would just say I agree with that. Like, just, check what your kids are doing. Obviously, I don't have kids, but, I know what they're like because I am one. So I would just say, be safe and, be sure to, check what your kids are doing, because it's in a lot of different things, and, you don't know, what one profile can be from the next.
I want to ask you, though. I mean, you and I talked about this a little bit earlier. You had a bad experience with social media, but you haven't abandoned social media.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I'm still on it, and it's mostly because, I just don't surround myself with, toxic things. I just follow my friends, and, I see what my friends post. I'm not, it's just to keep up with my friends because I don't see every one of them every day, but other than that,
Do you post?
No, not often. I have, 5 posts on my main, and it's, spanned out over, 4 years. So
it's more about seeing what your friends are doing.
Yeah, pretty much.
But you're not afraid. You're not afraid of somebody giving you a hard time in any which way, shape, or form?
No, not really. I mean, people have, but it's just like, I don't, it doesn't mean anything to me at this point. I could just like brush it off. Like it's not like it's going to stop anything.
Mark, do you deal with a lot of victims like Jordan?
Absolutely. I mean, in a lot of the different areas that we talked about, we're getting emails daily from a lot of different people on a lot of different issues: cyberbullying, harassment, hate speech, the deepfake issue we're talking about. So, and they're crying out for help, and they don't have the resources yet to be able to deal with their issues. But, you know, in cases of cyberbullying, these kids have no safe space anymore. It follows them everywhere. They move schools, towns. It follows them. So they definitely need some help and some resources.
So what kind of advice would you offer, Professor Lee, to people who might be sitting there thinking, wow, I'm too close to that myself?
Right. So, I mean, we talked a lot about all these, like, you know, technological advancements in AI that can, you know, create content, manipulate content. But even, you know, I think you don't need any of that. Anyone can create fake information, defame someone, harass someone online. I think the real danger is the social media platforms where things are not really regulated, right? So there's no, sometimes it's real, even I fell, you know, sometimes for certain news. I thought it was real, but it was completely fabricated. And the problem is that it spreads so fast. The damage is already done. There's nothing you can do to revert. Even if you find out afterwards that, you know, that was false information, it's already done, right?
The person. I'm curious. This is a little bit off point, but who does this? Is it people offshore? Is it who's
it depends.
Putting the fake stuff out there?
It depends on the specific applications. Again, I mean, if it's like for elections, if it's for you know, it can be for a certain company. You want to damage another competitor. You can easily, you know, create a fake rumor and then, you know, basically destroy the reputation of that company.
Now, if you did that with newspapers, television, or radio, you would have a libel suit on your hands.
Yeah.
But you don't have that with new media.
Right. It's hard to trace back where the source came from. And also, it just spreads so fast, right? And even, you know, there was this thing that happened in New Zealand, the shooting, and it's really funny, right? So I think social media was pretty fast in, like, trying to stop it. But then a few days later, I got it back again, right? And then from some other social media and, you know, some Chinese messengers, you know, it just appeared, right?
I got to tell you, I mean, in many ways, you got to be the protector of your own island. And so you have to create rules, and you have to say, you know what, I'm going to tolerate this, I'm not going to tolerate that. And I have rules. I have a public page. I have, well, everything I do is public, but I mean, you have to create rules, because people will pop in, they'll troll, they'll do all kinds of things just to push your buttons. And you have to not let them push your buttons.
The problem is that this is hard to enforce, because it's not the incentive of these companies to do this. They want to have traffic.
So I'm going to tell you a story. Somebody sent me a video the other day, and they were just completely distraught. And that's because this video, which went viral, showed a parent beating up their kid. It was a toddler. I don't even want to describe it for everybody, because it's just too hard to even talk about. But it wasn't pretty, and it was bloody. I mean, it was ugly. But it was going around, and it was going through Messenger, and she wanted to know what she could do about it. And so she called the police department, and they said, well, there's nothing we can do about it, because we don't know where it's coming from. And so now you got a crime. It's videotaped. The crime is there. It's child endangerment. What do you do with that? What do you do with that? It just perpetuates itself out there, and how do you stop it? I don't know how you do that.
Right. Right now, there aren't many mechanisms in place in order to. I mean, the only thing is you can just censor.
All right. Well, let's have Mark. What do you know about that?
Well, that's part of the reason on our deepfake legislation that we're working on with Assemblymember Tim Grayson in Sacramento, that it's a criminal bill, because if you're trying to sue people for some of this content online and deepfakes, good luck finding them. Good luck getting them through the civil system. What we need is dedicated law enforcement that have the tools that hunt down through, you know, a million IP addresses and figure out who that original poster was, because they have the ability, depending on the level of the crime, to get a warrant from the actual IP host to see where it came from.
But a lot of this, and I don't want to get too far afield, but a lot of this is very, very much like these scam calls you get on the phone. That there's some pirate off of some island somewhere telling you you're going to be arrested because you haven't paid your IRS, and it sounds like somebody in the background is dispatch unit number 47 to, and then they've got the address of your home and a whole nine yards, and you're sitting there going, oh my God, what did I do? And I was at UCLA one day, and I was at the police department at UCLA on a different story, and some girl comes in, she's in tears, she just bought gift cards to pay the scammers because she thought that she had done something wrong. Well, you know what? She's not the only one that does that. And there's no way to seemingly stop these calls, stop these scammers. There are all kinds of phone apps to try to do that. Not very effective in a lot of cases, but still, they will not stop. And I don't think that the people doing fake news and things like that on social media are going to stop either.
They're probably not going to. That's why we have to teach. That's what we do with the organization, is to teach them how to react and respond. They're going to see it. Our kids are going to see this. How do they react? How to respond to that?
Right.
That's really what we're here for.
Final thoughts. Gia.
I think we've started to objectify each other in ways that are just escalating through social media. The more detached we get from sitting in a room with somebody and having an actual human experience, the easier it is to other them and to treat them badly. And I think it's important for all of us to remember our humanity is very similar. We're more similar than different. And when we get separated by social media or race or country or sexual orientation or whatever, it's very easy to other others. And to me, the compassion and the self-compassion work that a lot of people are trying to do now is really part of the answer of sort of healing the underlying problem of how pervasive this is, that we can just treat people so badly without thinking too much about it.
Well, you know, I want to have Nikki have the last word, but I think we're very lucky in this room right now to have Jordan Peisner, who went through a very bad experience, but a positive came out of that. And I think we're lucky to have Nikki DeBose, because I think she also went through a very difficult situation, and she pulled herself out of that, and she did it on her own. And I think what that says is, if you have the fortitude, you can do it, Nikki.
Yeah, thank you, but I really appreciate your kindness, and I guess it was on me, but when you're sick, one of the most important things you have to realize is that you're not alone, and you do need people to help you get better. You know, I mean, obviously I was the one who had to get myself up every day and say I wanted to be recovered, but I needed so many people to help me and be supportive. And I think the last thing that I want to say to everyone, guys and girls, young people, old people, is that you're good enough just the way you are. And I think you need to know that, like, down deep in your soul, because not just on social media, but there's just things going on every day where it's easy to compare yourself and feel bad and then get into destructive behaviors. But the bottom line is that you were born perfect. You are perfect the way you are. You don't ever have to feel like you have to change yourself to meet anyone else's expectations.
Good advice from Nikki DeBose, and good conversation from all of our guests. Thanks so much for joining us this week for another episode of What the Hal. We'll see you next time.